The following shiur has been presented by Rav Shmuel Binyamin Honigwax, Dayan at the Beis Havad, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
For contract and iska, draft and review, wills and estates, or other halachic services, please call 1-888-485-8223 or visit thehalachacenter.org.
Kidin Daf Yud Aleph. The Gemara is discussing what we saw in the Mishnah, that the Shtar Olam Barakos is kosher. And besides for Gittin Nashim and Shechuri Avadim. And there were two pshatim in the Gemara on the distinction between regular Shtaris and Gittin Nashim and Shechuri Avadim. One pshat in the Gemara said that even Shtar Matana, even a Shtar that creates ownership, such as a Shtar Matana or a Shtar Mecher, that actually accomplishes ownership in the land, even such stars are kosher if they're oil and barakois. It means a star which that would only be considered kosher according to Goyish law, but would not be considered kosher according to Jewish law. Such a star would even be kosher to actually accomplish ownership in land. The other shot is that it would not be able to accomplish ownership. It can only be used as a proof. And the opinion that says that it can accomplish ownership relies on the idea of Dina de Malchus Adina. Since the government instituted a law which says that this shtar is able to accomplish a kinyan, therefore that law that the government instituted would have strength even with regard to a question between one Jew and another Jew. The other opinion seems to dispute that. So there's a lot of Rishonim that work hard to understand how is it possible for one opinion in our Gemara to dispute the idea of Dina de Malchus Adina. Don't we know that Shmuel says many times throughout Shas, Dina de Malchus Adina. Shmuel holds that whatever laws are instituted by the government, by the king, have strength and are able to affect Dina Torah. So why would we now find one opinion in the Gemara that seems to disregard this principle of Dina de Malchus Adina? So the three main opinions in the Rishonim about how to answer this question. One opinion in the Rishonim is that everybody agrees to Shmuel that Dina de Malchus Adina, and Dina de Malchus Adina should really be able to have effect even as far as a Shtar Matan or Shtar Mecher is concerned. Nevertheless, The Gemara's teretz that says chutz mikigitei nashim, that even shtar matana and shtar mecher would not be kosher if it's oilum bar kois, that opinion is trying to answer the Mishnah's halacha even in a situation where there was no dina malchus adina instituted at all. In other words, everybody agrees that if there is dina malchus adina, if the government decrees that this shtar should have power, then indeed the shtar will be able to accomplish the kinyan. However, the sheet that holds that it doesn't work by shtar matan and shtar mecher holds that the Mishnah is not necessarily discussing a situation that the government decreed that such a shtar should have power. Another opinion in the Rishonim is that certainly we're talking about a case where the government did decree that the shtar has power. Nevertheless, even though we generally would agree with Shmuel that Dina Malchus Adina, we would say that this opinion in the Gemara, that Shtar Matana and Shtar Mecher does not work, is of the opinion that Shmuel's halacha only applies when there's a Tayelas L'melech, when there's Hanav a Tayelas L'melech, when the government or the king actually gains something by having this law in place. In other words, laws which pertain to taxes, or laws which are needed in order to facilitate the collection of taxes, even if those laws happen to apply to ownership of land, nevertheless, such laws would take effect because the king gains by having this law because it enables him to collect taxes. However, the case in the Gemara that we're talking about, that the law was that this particular shtar would be able to accomplish a transfer of ownership on a piece of land, such a law is of no benefit to the king at all, and therefore Dina Malchus Adina would not apply to such a law because Dina Malchus Adina is limited to situations where the king gains benefit from the law. The third opinion is the opinion of Rabbeinu Yoina, who takes this a little bit further, and he says that Dina Malchus Adina only applies when two Jews willingly go to a Goyish court to have the court adjudicate their dispute. In such a case, since they are willingly accepting upon themselves the authority of the Goyisha court, therefore the Goyisha laws will be able to control their dispute. However, in a situation where the Jews never asked the Goyisha court to adjudicate their dispute, they never asked for these Goyisha laws to apply to them, in such a situation, Dina Malchus Dina will have no effect on a dispute between two Jews, and therefore, a shtar which is written by a Kohen will not be valid according to this opinion of the Gemara. There's a very big question nowadays in America. A lot of times, it's beneficial for a person to put his house under someone else's name. Reuven will buy a house, and for one reason or another, he doesn't want to be listed as the titular owner of the house. So he'll go ahead and ask a friend of his Shimon to sign all the documents, and the deed will be in Shimon's name rather than in Reuven's name. And then Reuven and Shimon go ahead and they write up a shtar in Bezdin that says that really Reuven is the owner of the house. Then, for one reason or another, Shimon goes ahead and takes out a mortgage or something like that. Or Shimon is in desperate need of cash, and out of desperation, he'll take this house, which really should belong to Reuven, and he goes out and sells it to a third person. And Reuven comes along and says, "What's going on? This is really my house." And he shows that in Bezdin, he has a shtar that says that the house really, indeed, belongs to Reuven. So now there's a very big question. Will Reuven be able to force Levi to give him back that house? Shimon sold the house that really, technically, belonged to Reuven, even though Shimon's name was on the deed. And the question is whether Shimon's sale to Levi is a valid sale, and would the house now belong to Levi, despite the fact that Reuven has a kosher shtar from Bezdin that says that the house really belongs to Reuven. So this question was a very, very hot question in the 1800s. There was what was called the Tapu laws in this is on the Turkey in the 1800s. The Ottoman Empire instituted a land registry law where every person had to register their land in the government register books, and the only way that you can own land was if you went ahead and registered it in the Goyisha books. The reason, the motive behind this law seems to have been L'tayalas HaMelech. It seems to have been in order to facilitate the collection of taxes with regard to these lands. And therefore, the king said that you cannot own land unless you have it duly registered in the government books. And there's many tshuvas and achronim that discuss at length what the halacha should be if a Jew did not register his land and another Jew registered his land despite the fact that it belonged to somebody else. And then the Jew under whose name the land is registered wants to go ahead and sell it or something like that. A very, very similar question to our question. There's a lot of achronim that take different sides on this topic. And Rav Shlomo Zalman has a very, very long piece about this in the Sefer Madanei Eretz to discuss whether or not land has to be registered in order for it to belong to you, because the system in the state of Israel seems to have followed the Ottoman Turkish law, and therefore it was necessary for Shlomo Zalman to discuss whether it's possible in the state of Israel. I believe that piece in the Madanei Eretz was written even during the British Mandate, and that was following the system of the Ottoman Empire. I'm not sure if that changed later on or not, but he has a long, long piece over there where he goes to prove that the consensus of the Achronim is that the Goyisha law does not affect Jewish ownership. If a Jew goes ahead and acquires a piece of land with a kinyan of Kesef Shtar Chazaka, the kinyanim that are ordained for Jewish people, the fact that the Goyisha law is that you cannot own the land unless you register it in the government land registry, that does not affect the ownership of the Jewish owner, and any din Torah and any argument or dispute between two Jews, the Jewish law would govern rather than the law of land registry, which that limits the Jew's ownership. The question is whether this has any connection to the situation nowadays in the United States, where there's a totally different system of laws. In the United States, the motive for the law that says that if a person sells land to which he has title, that sale is valid even if he had given another contract to somebody else. In other words, If I write a contract between myself and somebody else that my house is sold to him, and he doesn't go ahead and register that deed with the proper government officials, and then I subsequently go and sell that house to a third party, the reason why my second sale will take effect rather than the first is not because the government wants to have a record of the sales in order to be able to collect taxes. The reason that this law was propagated seems to be because they're trying to protect the buyers. Since there's no way for a person really to determine who the land belongs to, the only method by which people in the country rely, the only method that people rely on to be able to determine whether or not the person indeed has title to the land is by checking the land registry system, by checking to see who has the deed. Therefore, to protect buyers, it will be impossible to buy land and be confident in a person's purchase if he had no way to verify who that land belongs to. And if a person could go ahead and write a private contract between him and somebody else saying that the land belongs to somebody else and not register it, and then that person will be able to go and void the sale which was made subsequently, then it will be impossible to buy any land. So therefore, in order to be able to buy and sell land with confidence, a law was passed that said that a person can rely on the land registry, and if the other owner, so to speak, the quote unquote owner, were, even if that owner proves that he really owned it, that wouldn't help him at all, and the land would belong to a third party. It's possible to say that even all the achronim that dispute the system of Turkish land registry would agree that in the United States this law would apply between two Jews. The reason for this position is because the most of these achronim base their opinion on the shita of the Shach. The Shach brings down a tshuva to Rashi. The Ramah in Chayesh Mishpat says, let's start with the Ramah. The Ramah says that Dina Malchus Adina does apply between two Jews. The Shach takes strong issue with the Ramah. The Shach says, the Shach brings down a tshuva to Rashba, who goes and says very strongly that Dina Malchus Adina should not apply between two Jews, and he says also that Dina Malchus Adina should only apply when there's Te'elas L'melech, when the Melech gains something, when the government has some sort of benefit from the Dina Malchus. So the Rashba seems to be taking the opinion, the middle opinion that we said, the second opinion, that holds that Dina Malchus Adina only applies when there's Te'elas L'melech, when there's no Te'elas L'melech, when there's no benefit to the government, there will not be a Din of Dina Malchus Adina. However, there are other Rashbas that seem to clearly contradict this first Rashba. And the Rashba says clearly that if two Jews go ahead, he says, what's the pshat in the Gemara and Gittin, according to this? What's the pshat in the opinion in the Gemara and Gittin that says that there is Dina Malchus Adina between two Jews by Ishtar Mecha or Ishtar Matana? So the Rashba says that the reason for that is because when the Jews went ahead and voluntarily signed the shtar, ha'asli ba'arkois, they signed a shtar which is only recognized by the government, so they're voluntarily accepting upon themselves the Dina Malchusa. So the Rashba limits this idea. The Rashba takes this idea that it's only when there's Te'alas L'melech, and he limits it. He says, you're right, the Dina Malchusa Dina should only apply when there's Te'alas L'melech, but when two Jews willingly accept upon themselves the Dina Malchusa, then the Dina Malchusa will apply to the situation between two Jews also. The explanation for this might be because if we try to think about it, why shouldn't Dina Malchusa Dina apply between two Jews? And the reason may be because the Rishonim that hold that Dina Malchusa Dina does not control dispute between two Jews is because they hold that the idea that many of these laws were instituted to benefit society. And since Jews don't need these laws, because we have our own set of laws that works very well for us, so therefore, there's no reason for us to accept upon ourselves these rules. This idea is based on the Rashbam of Baba Basra. The Rashbam of Baba Basra says that the reason why Dina Malchus Adina is because the people in the kingdom willingly accept upon themselves the laws that the government passes. And even though these laws are not instituted by the Torah, people, a community, has the ability to create its own bylaws for itself, and they're obligated by the Torah to abide by those bylaws, even though those bylaws were not instituted by the Torah. A community has the ability to create its own laws. It's possible that the Rashba holds like the Rashbam, and he holds that Dina Malchus Adina generally should not apply between two Jews because they don't need that law. However, if the Jews go ahead and willingly accept upon themselves the Dina Malchus Adina, then they are choosing to voluntarily join the community that instituted these laws, and therefore these laws would also apply between these two Jews. The argument could be made that since, although in the time of Chazal, the Yidden had their own system of how to determine ownership of a land, there was a system where Edom, where the witnesses, were mighty coil, they would go ahead and spread the news that this land belonged to person A instead of person B. Once the sale took place, and Edom were the signatories on the transfer of ownership, the Edom would immediately go ahead and tell whoever they knew that this land now belongs to Shimon rather than Reuven. And therefore, when Levi was coming to buy the land, all he had to do was ask around and people would immediately tell him who the land belonged to. So they had a valid system. Nowadays, that system obviously has fallen into disuse. And when a Jew is going to buy a land, he does not rely on the idea of koel that existed in ancient times. Rather, he relies wholeheartedly on this land registry that was instituted to protect the buyers. So the Jews may be willingly accepting the law of Dina Malchus Adina that says that if you don't have title to the land, you don't have a right to sell the land. So therefore, and the person who does have title does have the right to sell the land and can sort of void that original sale to the person who didn't have title. So therefore, since it seems that the Jews are abiding by this rule and they're relying on this rule and they need this rule, so the limit to Dina Malchus Adina that we spoke about may not apply to this specific law.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To sign up for the Halacha Center's weekly interactive e-journal, please email subscribe to info@thehalachacenter.org.